afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the meeting of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. It's Wednesday, July 11th, 2007. It's approximately 1:30 in the afternoon. We're in the State Capitol Building, LCR1, here in Pierre. I'm Commissioner Dusty Johnson. Joining me here in Pierre are Commissioners Gary Hansen and Steve Kolbeck. We do have an agenda as well as an addendum to the agenda, and with that, we'll proceed. Item number one under Consumer Reports is a status report for some of the inquiries and complaints we've received. Ms. Gregg.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. The Commission has received a total of 104 contacts since the last report was prepared for the June 26, 2007 Commission meeting. 36 of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 21 of the contacts involved electrical services, 4 contacts involved natural gas, 16 contacts involved cellular phone service, 9 contacts related to the Do Not Call Registry, and 18 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. And 1,156 of the 1,340 complaints received in 2007 have been resolved, and 2,258 of the 2,466 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved.
Great. Thanks, Ms. Gregg. Any comments or questions by commissioners or advisors? Hearing none, we will proceed to the electric portion of the docket. Item number one is EL06-010, and this deals with the consideration of the new purpose standards. The question for the Commission today is, what is the Commission's decision regarding both Purpose Standard 14, which is time-based metering, and Purpose Standard 15, interconnection? Staff did file a memo, and perhaps that's the best place to start, by looking to Ms. Van Bakkern and Mr. Solem for their comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kara Van Bakkern for staff. Mr. Solem is out doing pipeline inspection, so he's not here today, so I'll speak on behalf of us both. I don't have anything further to add at this time to that memo, and Mr. Solem did an analysis and broke it down and tried to put some weight on some of the items, and if you have any particular questions, I'd be happy to try and answer his analysis.
And perhaps it would be most efficient for us to bifurcate the issue and see if we have any comments or discussions first on smart metering or time-based metering. And so let's just see. We've got some interveners. We've got some interested parties. Does anybody have any comments on that particular standard? Hearing none, are there any commissioner comments or questions? I would just note that I think there seemed to be broad consensus that at least at this time, adoption of this purpose standard would not be in the best interest, in the public interest. That's what staff came to the conclusion of, as did I think almost everybody we spoke to on this. So I would just be curious, did either of the commissioners see any reason why we wouldn't reject this proposed standard?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Hansen. That is probably my main reason for being mute when you asked the question on whether or not there were any considerations by the commissioners. From my standpoint, I agree with staff, and I agree with recommendations and discussions that were held during the processes, especially from a standpoint that it appears that purpose standard, at least from, I don't know how much of other information should be brought into these hearings, but it's difficult to ignore the facts that other states are experiencing right now with similar types of legislation that they've had. And there is a real likelihood of consumers actually paying more. There's the significant challenge with this type of a standard that really the only people that are going to benefit are the very large consumers who can dedicate a staff to examining world energy markets in anticipation of where the markets are going to go. And there's potential for the average consumer to lock in rates that are actually going to be higher and not lower. And from that standpoint, I think that it's best left the way it is.
Thanks, Commissioner Hansen. Any other commissioner comments or questions? Ms. Wiest, anything to add prior to action on this item?
No, nothing except that my recommendation is that the Commission would not adopt the standard.
Thank you very much. With that, any Commissioner action on standard number 14?
Motion is in order, I believe. And purpose standard 14, I would Motion that we do not accept Purpose Standard 14.
Okay, motion has been made to reject the standard. No second is necessary. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. The commission does not accept that particular standard. We'll move now to discussion and possible action on purpose standard number 15. This deals with interconnection. And again, I think perhaps we would maybe hear a summary of the filed memo by Ms. Van Bakkeren and then any of the other parties that wish to comment.
Staff, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Staff does recommend that the commission considered this particular standard and that through some workshopping, we could compose some potential drafts of what would work in South Dakota. And I think looking at some examples of what could work in South Dakota could ultimately help make the final decision as to what it should look like. But staff does recommend that commission examine this further.
And staff did lay out a procedure for moving forward on page 2 of the memo. Any of the other parties, interested persons, wish to comment on purpose standard number 15? Any commissioner advisor? Well, perhaps we'll look to Ms. Wiest for any comments she might have.
I think that as a first step, what the commission could do is that the standard is somewhat broadly written, and it really requires that the commission, you know, take some steps to implement some sort of best practices for interconnection. And I think one of the first steps that the commission could take is to have the affected utilities file interconnection agreements and procedures that are in accordance with current best practices. I think those filings could be made to the commission. Subject to the commission approval, that would give interested parties an opportunity to review those procedures, perhaps have any questions or concerns brought to the commission with them. And like I said, I think that could be a first step. And I think the second step would be similar along to the lines of what staff is recommending, and in that the staff could work with the utilities to see if there is a need for more of a uniform standard agreement and procedures throughout, you know, for our affected utilities, the one that we have jurisdiction over, and they could work with the parties and then come back to the commission next year and see what the progress has been made on that. And then specifically with respect to the IEEE 1547 standards, I think the commission could adopt those standards. It was mentioned that not all of the standards, I think 1547 and 1547.1, have been adopted. So I believe the commission could go forward with adopting those. With respect to the other standards, I think the commission could find that once those standards are adopted by that board, then we could have an opportunity at least for comment by parties to see if there are any problems in adopting those. At this point, I'm not recommending that the 1547 be exclusive standards. I think there was a lot of testimony that there are other standards out there, whether they be for bigger projects or whatever. But the utilities would certainly could then also tell us what those other standards are that they follow. In doing all this, I think the commission would just have a better idea of what is out there with the utilities and what problems, if any, that any person who seeks to interconnect is encountering.
Thanks, Ms. Wiest. I'd like to offer up perhaps a counterproposal, something a little different than what staff suggested, just to get staff and any of the parties' take on it. You know, Ms. Van Bakkeren, staff recommended starting essentially from six different points and trying to find commonalities within those documents. Did staff give any consideration to starting instead from a body of work that's already been done by a state? I mean, other states have developed uniform or nearly uniform standards and processes, procedures for moving forward. Did you think about starting with, say, the Minnesota model, sitting down with all the parties and saying, exactly on what line or on what page would these be unacceptable or counterproductive for South Dakota to adopt?
This is Kara Van Bakkeren for staff. We did consider that, and it appeared from a lot of the testimony that we heard at the hearing. It was held several weeks ago now. It sounded as if there was already some commonality amongst all of the utilities, and so I think either, starting from either end, will find the same result, and I think both will be equally effective. Mr. Solomon and I simply thought that if we could first find the commonalities, it would be less frightening for maybe the utilities to move towards change.
Well, and I will note that I think a two-tiered process may make sense. I mean, I think even in the interim, even if we were starting from a different starting position than you suggested, I think even in the interim, it is good public policy to have them filed with the commission, the individual companies' procedures and requirements. I don't know if phase two, tier two, takes 6 months, a year, or longer, but it would be nice to have those on record. And was staff suggestion so they just would be on record, or that the commission would actually adopt, make a vote of accepting them?
We did not consider the commission accepting them. Rather, have them on file and for staff to work with those utilities to identify the commonalities amongst them all.
Would having the companies file them and then have, a hearing where the commission were to review them and then make a vote whether to accept them or not, I mean, would that provide a platform and an opportunity for people who had concerns with particular, I mean, we heard there is some evidence on the record that at least some utilities in this country are using standards or procedures that do create obstacles for distributed generation, probably not even purposefully. Would that commission action not create an opportunity for the companies and the commission to review standards and procedures and maybe make some changes?
That does sound like that would be an effective way to, like you said, identify those portions that maybe are difficult and just completely unintentionally difficult.
Perhaps I'll just pause to see if any of the parties or any interest, or anybody else has any concerns, comments, or questions with regard to, I think, two components that we've been discussing recently. Number one, as opposed to just starting from six and trying to get from one, also starting from one and seeing to what extent that might be acceptable. That's component one. And then component two, actually asking the commission to accept the filed procedures and requirements rather than just take, receive them. Any comments from anyone?
This is Brad Klein from the Environmental Law and Policy Center.
Go ahead, Mr. Klein.
Thank you. I think that as far as kind of an informational process, requesting the six separate existing procedures to be filed would be helpful, and it would allow the commissioners and utilities to become more familiar with each other's procedures. But I think as far as trying to, if the goal is trying to reach current best practices for interconnection, it may be helpful after that step or, can at the same time with that step to look at an existing model along the lines that you suggested, Mr. Chairman. That is something that ELPC has helped participate in other states. I know that in Illinois, we started with a model that began at the Mid-Atlantic Distributed Resources Initiative, and then it was subsequently adopted by the state of Maryland and some other states, and that provided a good model that we're now looking at individual utility practices in Illinois and seeing where they're consistent with this one model, and changes are able to be made to that to make it reflect what will work in Illinois. Something along those lines could also happen in South Dakota. I know that during the hearing on this, at least two utilities said that they have experience with Minnesota's procedures. They thought that they worked fairly well, so that could be an option in South Dakota to look at what Minnesota's doing and see if it'll work there. I also know that there are at least one utility in South Dakota that is also participating in workshops in Illinois, and there may be some similar workshops occurring in Iowa, so there's some existing experience there. I think that that procedure has worked fairly well, and I would suggest if the goal is to get current best practices of interconnection in place consistent with the federal standard. Should probably look to what those best practices are rather than just looking at what is currently being done and reviewing those procedures. And also, the Environmental Law and Policy Center would be pleased to help facilitate any of those workshops or provide input from our experiences in other states.
Thanks very much, Mr. Klein. Sure. Any other parties wish to comment? And perhaps I'll try to provide a little bit of insight to my colleagues as why maybe I'd go 20% different than what staff suggested and more along the lines of what I've been trying to articulate. Two things. First off, I think we did hear from a number of the affected companies that they thought a uniform model could be cumbersome. But what we didn't hear was any evidence or any information or point in any other state where they do have a uniform model and where that's been cumbersome. I think there was more fear there than there was actual point to any evidence where they were cumbersome. And since other states have been down this path, one would think that if uniform procedures, agreements, requirements weren't working, we would be able to know about it. So it seems to me that we shouldn't give up on a uniform model quite so quickly. The second thing, we've got a federal department. The Department of Energy has found in a report that interconnection agreements are an obstacle to distributed generation. That may not be the case in South Dakota. But it seems to me, as long as we have that finding out there, that they are an obstacle, the burden of proof, at least for me, is in my mind to prove conclusively that they're not an obstacle. And if I don't know that, then I feel like we should try to move towards something that's a little more uniform. Those are my thoughts anyway.
This is Gary Hansen. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your bringing up the subject and discussion of where we're directed at the present time. I'd just like to note first of all, I very much appreciate the information that we've received from staff on their memos, especially looking at some of them at the present time and the subject that you're discussing. I look at a memo that we received from Ms. Weiss that states that the Minnesota standard took 5 years to develop, and if, in fact, we engage in that type of a direction, I don't know that we want to look at even 2-3 years to go through the process of developing. So I think there is some value into looking at standards, although when I was in the legislature, we used to say if it's working in Minnesota, it better be defeated in South Dakota. So maybe I'm taking a little bit of a different direction here with that. I think Kara has a good point when she talks about making it less frightening. You spoke of fear as well, and as regulators, that's something that I don't think we think of a lot of the impetus and the fear that we cause some utilities from a standpoint of being able to do their job as we're attempting to do our job. So I think that's legitimate concern, and I like the direction, Mr. Chairman, that you have advocated here and talked about. I think there is some significant value in looking at what is taking place, and perhaps that is inevitable anyway as the staff goes through this process. As Ms. Weist notes in one of her messages to us, that Black Hills Power is in the beginning stages of developing an interconnection policy and plans to base it on Cheyenne's Lights standards. And Cheyenne Lights standards were based on Xcel standards, which were implemented in Colorado. So there is somewhat of a domino process here and a learning process. And if it's been developed in other states, then perhaps we don't need to go through that process as well.
Yes, this is Commissioner Quebec. I do feel that we do need an interconnection policy. I do. Where to start with that? I tend to agree with staff that it should be within our state. I understand that other states have had success with it, and yes, Minnesota's taken a while to develop. And I don't believe in reinventing the wheel, but I think that our wheel is quite different than other states. Our population is different, and economics are different. I know that Mr. Klein said maybe to learn from other states, but I have a fear that what works in in a state of 1 or 2 or 3 million people just won't work in a state with less than a million people in population. So I tend to agree with the staff's recommendation, excluding some of the time limits, I guess. I'd like to maybe give them some more time to our utilities. And then what I think that will bring in is if they are doing multi-jurisdictional or multi-state, that's how we'll get the other states' input into that. Because if they are doing business in two or more states, then they could incorporate different policies that way.
Thanks, Commissioner Colbeck. Ms. Wiest, with regard to my suggestion that the commission, you know, accept or approve the filings by the companies, I mean, would that be productive? Is that potentially counterproductive? Are we going to end up, you know, not quite litigating, but regulating this 6 times as opposed to once at the end of a process?
You know, my suggestion with respect to having the parties file, and it doesn't even have, and the way I envision the order is that it wouldn't necessarily be exactly what they're doing now, but the order would say, we want an interconnection process that is based on current best practices. You guys file that for approval. And I guess I can understand if you want to, you know, skip that step or something. The reason, one of the main reasons I put it forth is kind of a timing issue. I think at the hearing at the workshop, there were issues as to people would like to know what the processes are, and there were points made that if things were on file with the commission, it would be easier for people to get at that. And we all know when we start a process that, you know, we'd like it to be done at a certain time, and sometimes it's just not possible for it to be done within a certain time frame. So the first step was just to get things going, I guess, and to get something on the record that people could come to us and look at and you know, criticize or support, and just so that people would have some place to go, I guess, right away.
So you wouldn't see any particular benefit to having the commission take action on those filings?
I think the commission could take action or at least approve them in the interim. Like, for example, make kind of an interim approval pending the outcome of whatever workshops or something come up. The only reason I was kind of going along the lines of approval is that if it's for approval, then I think the commission does have a lot more control over what goes into those agreements and those kind of things. But if the commissioners just want them, you know, as filed for informational purposes, I mean, that would be workable also.
Thanks very much. I think I'm on the verge of making a motion, but before doing that, maybe we'll just see if any of the other commissioners or any parties have any other comments.
As you work through the process of framing that, this is Gary Hansen. I would appreciate the consideration that we give towards filings be for approval. I think that gives more weight and direction, gives us the opportunity to hear from other parties and going through the process. I don't know how much direction you wish to for us to give staff in this process, but I would like to note that I did not mean to imply that we should adopt Minnesota's standards as the carte blanche. We certainly should examine those and make them fit to the state of South Dakota. Excuse me. And I do agree very much with Commissioner Colbeck that I believe there was a discussion of 30 days, and that should probably be extended from the standpoint of the amount of time that we see here. But overall, I think staff have done an excellent job in giving us direction on this, and I wholeheartedly support the position of the discussion from the chairman.
Thanks very much. Anything else? And I will use, you know, page 2 of staff's memo as sort of a blueprint and outline. I would move that all companies with an interconnection tariff submit such documents to the commission within 60 days of receipt of the commission order adopting the PURPA rule. And further, that the commission staff would then compare and contrast those tariffs, and that they would coordinate and plan to meet with utility companies to discuss those similarities. I would also add additionally that the Minnesota models or some other, you know, state model whichever staff decides is the best default would also be a part of that discussion. And that any similarities and differences between the six filings would be compared with what Minnesota is already doing or some other state. I would also note that those submissions would be for approval by the commission. That also that we would ask staff to schedule workshops throughout 2008 to facilitate the creation of best practices. And finally, that at the conclusion of those workshops, staff would provide to the commission a report identifying what they believe the next best steps are, whether that's a formal hearing, whether that's well, just what they want to do next. I would ask that in that report, if the work group determines that they do not want to accept with revisions some other already completed, you know, whether they're Minnesota standards or Maryland or somebody else's, that they explain in the report why that starting point is unacceptable. I mean, essentially why we need to start, you know, from scratch from a South Dakota process rather than piggybacking off someone else's. That is the rambling motion. No second is required. Is there any discussion?
I just have one. Are these going to, and this is probably directed at staff, would all of these communications back and forth be posted on the Internet underneath this docket filing?
Yes, it would all be public and available for interveners to participate. And
okay. Do you see any problems with maybe confidentiality or anything like that? How is the best way we're going to share this information to come up with the best case scenario?
Certainly we'll follow all of our confidentiality rules in the event one of the utilities believes that some of it is confidential, and we'll work with those issues as they arise.
Although just as a clarification, I mean, certainly staff can and does have conversations with parties, and those conversations and correspondences are not automatically put up on the Internet. I mean, you're not suggesting that all correspondence would be?
No, specifically the workshops is what I was, mm-hmm. what I assumed you meant. I apologize, Commissioner Colbeck. The workshop certainly would be an open forum type setting.
I guess my only, I'm just wondering how we're going to get to the best case scenario here, how all this information will come in and be processed is my only concern. Do you have any questions or concerns that you could think of right now?
I don't. The analysts here at the commission are fabulously talented in their data requests and requesting information from these utilities specifically on point. And so I believe as a staff we can come up with some great questions and topics that will direct the conversation with the utilities.
Thank you.
Well, it is probably worth noting that this workshop process would be far more collaborative than, you know, perhaps adversarial like we would often have with data requests and docketed items. And then presumably, I mean, understanding, I mean, if this motion passes, the commissioners, I think, will be on record as saying they would like to move toward greater uniformity, and hopefully all of the affected companies and staff would, in a good faith effort, move in that direction as quickly as possible. Other discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks very much to everyone. You know, I, in my rush to get started with the fun stuff, neglect to call roll, and it's been requested that I do that so we have an idea of who's on the telephone line so we can have that in our minutes. We've heard from Mr. Klein on the telephone. Thanks, Mr. Klein. Mr. Wazorek, are you there?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Great, thanks. Ms. Sisick?
Present.
Great, thanks. Ms. Moore?
Present, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. Mr. Kramer?
Yes, I'm present.
Yeah, Ms. Grosvenor?
Present, sir.
Okay. Mr. Taylor?
Meredith Moore appearing on behalf of Mr. Taylor.
Great, thanks. Ms. Siebold?
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Shara? Ms. Stewart?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great, thanks. With that, let's go ahead and proceed to, I believe, the next agenda area is hydrocarbon pipeline. Item number one is HP07-001, and this does deal with the application for the Keystone Pipeline. Question before the commission today is, shall the commission grant party status to any parties that may have filed? This time, let's go ahead and look to staff to see if they have any particular comments with regard to all the filings that have come in.
No particular comments other than the agenda lists many names, and we've had some that have filed since the agenda went out. However, I think the call of the question does indicate that we're looking at all of those that have intervened prior to the deadline, which was yesterday.
And at least by my count, Ms. Van Bakker, we're looking at everybody after Daryl Nelson up to and through Edward Miller. And by my count, there was 11 additional filings in the last week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My list goes through Mr. Miller as well.
Obviously, we'll check with the applicant here in a minute, but does staff have any objections to any of these intervention requests?
No objections.
Okay, great. Mr. Kennecke for the applicant.
Thank you, Commissioner. Brett Kennecke appearing for TransCanada Keystone Project. If I understand right, is Edward Miller the last person who has intervened, and are there any interventions filed since Miller on the 9th?
We will double check. When I printed this off 2 hours ago, that was what I had.
Okay, I just wasn't clear from the conversation that you were engaged in with staff as to whether there was anybody else, but we have no objection to any of the interventions which have been filed.
Great, thanks. We do have a large number of parties that have already been granted intervention. Do any of them have any concerns with these filings? Hearing none, any comments or questions by commissioners or advisors?
Just a curiosity question, Gary Hansen. Do you have a count on how many people have? I didn't bother trying to count. I'm just curious whether you, if you did not, don't worry about it. It looks like there's probably three people who did not intervene at this point. But I'm 118, is that the number? Plus, oh, what was granted previously, the number that, and 250 or so, okay. Mr. Kennecke, you're going to contact each one of those folks?
Looking forward to it, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
My very quick count looks like 140, I would say between 140 and 160. That was a really quick count. Between, I'm giving myself a large margin.
Thank you, Ms. Van Bakker.
Yeah, Commissioner Kolbeck.
Yes. Are we formulating a plan as far as staff on how to deal with this many? I know that the comment has come up. We haven't had this many interveners in a case before. I know that we had run into time delays, certain issues like that as far as on some of our other dockets that involve large numbers like this. Do you foresee anything that we could head off at the pass?
No. I mean, I think, you know, we're going to have to deal with the fact that these are parties. It has occurred to me, and maybe it's a discussion we want to have right now, you know, although we haven't quite put it on there as a question for today. Originally, without knowing how many we were going to have, if we've got what I'm reckoning, are you saying we have 160 total now, Kara, or 160 plus what we had before? Okay. Roughly 140 parties. Certain things and the way we do things have done things in cases in the past are probably not going to work very well. For example, generally we deal with scheduling really on a consensual basis ordinarily, and only in a rare case do we end up having to come before the commission to have you lay down the law when people can't agree. Once in a while they can't, but almost always we can. I'm thinking in this case, it's probably just not going to be possible maybe to do some of those things that way. What I thought I might do here over the next week or so is maybe put out a correspondence to all the people who have intervened and with maybe some questions on there. And sort of scope out what the lay of the land is and what their expectations are. I think part of what's gone on here, honestly, is, and you've seen some of the literature that's been filed with us at the hearings, and sort of the idea out there that, well, if we have a whole bunch of people intervene, that'll somehow sway the commission's decision, and sort of the county commissioner way of doing business as opposed, or legislature as opposed to an adjudication like this. I'm not sure all of the people that intervene really expect to be in there as parties in the way we normally think of that. And I'm trying to think of a set of questions I might put out to interveners to sort of scope out whether there are some people that may not want to be really, really in all the way or not. But otherwise, if we can't reach some kind of way of categorizing these into what I'd call active, you know, full participant interveners versus others who are maybe just more really in more as interested parties. That maybe in lieu of some of the more collaborative things we've done in the past, we're probably just going to have to come before the commission and have things like schedule just decided by the commission. With our meetings noticed out to the parties and come what may, and we'll be in here with suggestions to you, but probably with a little more active commission involvement on that level than we normally would have.
It is probably worth noting, you didn't mention it, but I think when you were being obliquely critical of county commissioners' decision-making processes, you were speaking of North Dakota county commissioners.
I was, and I wasn't, and I was not being critical in any way of county commissions or of any such. It's just that this, in this particular process is a adjudicatory process, and it's based on facts. It's not based on popularity. It's not a political process.
Mr. Smith, I think you're probably good to go. Let's just go ahead and turn that mic off and
please take the shovel out of it.
Yeah, that's right. No, county commissions do great work throughout. And I might mention, I think what you laid out probably makes sense, Mr. Smith. I mean, I'm just going to take a guess here, and, you know, you shouldn't make predictions, but you're going to have a scheduling conference, and you're going to have dozens upon dozens upon dozens of these people who don't participate. And we may have a very formal process, a hearing process, and you're going to have dozens upon dozens upon dozens of interveners who don't introduce evidence, they don't raise objections to evidence, they don't participate in cross-examination. And in fact, at the end of this, I think we'll look at this long list and we'll say, look at all these dozens upon dozens upon dozens of people that were not interveners in any sense of the word. And I think we do want to create a process where if people want to be active participants, they obviously have full rights and opportunities to do so, and that the others don't unnecessarily hinder what needs to be a good and fair process here.
I think that's true. That's my expectation. I'm going to just make a wild guess just based on my quick look through the list of people, and that we'll probably have five or six participants that are quite active. You know, we've got Webb, who's already been very active, and we've got Mr. Hone, and perhaps the South Dakota Resource Coalition, and perhaps East River, and maybe the Association of Townships, and I forgot what the exact name of the organization is. City of Yankton, you never know. They might be. And some of the other cities in the area. And probably some of the ordinary citizens will be very active, too, but I'm thinking that an awful lot of people out there probably really want more to be included from an information receipt standpoint, and just to have it on record that they cared enough to be noted as a party in the proceeding and to have those rights. And, you know, one of the things I do think we're going to have to bite the bullet and do, and we just passed our electronic filing rules, you know, for this case poses some challenges in that regard, in that my suspicion is we're dealing with quite a number of people on this list who are probably not anywhere near as plugged into electronic business as the people we deal with normally on a day-to-day basis. And my feeling is, like, step one, for example, in terms of kind of getting the lay of the land, my assumption is we're going to have to do all of these services for a while, at least till we figure out who can or cannot participate electronically, done via old-fashioned paper service on everybody to make sure we've complied with procedural requirements.
Thanks, Mr. Smith. Other Commissioner comments, questions, advisor comments, questions? Okay, hearing none, I would move that the commission approve party status for those that have filed up through the deadline. Motion has been made. No second is required. Is there any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Colbeck.
Yes, I just want to make sure that there's, you're saying that you have a plan, you're formulating a plan in place because of those.
Yes. I mean, I think it's very much so.
Okay.
You know, as I've told the, what I'd call the real, so far real active parties, such as Reed Rasmussen, attorney for Webb, and the applicant and some of the other people who have emailed me asking for, okay, what happens now? You know, what I've told them is, let's wait and see first. Let's get the whole, let's get past this deadline of June 10th or July 10th. Let's see what we have first. And once we've gotten past that, I think what I would propose first is that we, through a letter, probably we might consider a mailing out to parties to first of all, I mean, step one for me is the law talks in terms of a request for receipt of all filings. Unlike our normal procedure, just being a party doesn't automatically give you the right to service of everything in this particular chapter. You have to make a request. Otherwise, the whole purpose of the filing at the county, I think, was originally sort of intended to deal with this kind of situation, where that information is provided on a general basis at the county, where if we have 1,000 parties, they have a repository to go look at stuff. So every single human being out there that wants to be a part of this doesn't have to have, you know, if we're looking at like Big Stone, that record is 10,000 pages long. Not everybody, including John Smith, I don't want 10,000 pages in my house, you know, and there might be other people out there that don't either. And so I think there's going to be challenges here. And what I'm hopeful is by the next meeting, which is, I forgot the date, it's in early August sometime, that we'd be able to come back in with a very concrete plan, including probably some requests for commission action as to exactly how you want to address certain issues. But what I'd like to do is try to gather some information first from the people that are now in.
Thank you.
We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed. Oh, Mr. Kennecke.
Thank you, Commissioners, if I might. I just do want to stress, I understand the commission's going to have, and staff are going to have some difficulties in dealing with the number of interveners. I'm under the same pressures, although I don't owe the same duties to those interveners. I don't think that the commission and staff do. But I do want to stress that my client's interested in teeing this up and moving forward. And we're certainly willing to, I think, be patient as the commission and staff work through this. But at some point, I guess it'd be my hope that on August 7th, the next meeting, we come back with the schedule and be ready to have the commission bless that and start. There's going to be testimony, rebuttal, experts. There's a lot of work to be done here, and I want to get moving on it, I guess, is what I want to say. I don't want another month to elapse before, and I don't think John does either. I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but I think where I want to be on August 7th is saying this is the schedule and let's go forward with it.
Well, Mr. Kennecke, I think the commission understands your sentiments, and listen, I don't know whether the ultimate ruling on this commission is going to be yes or no or yes, but here are the conditions. But at some point, we do need to get to whatever that answer is going to be, and we need to get to it expeditiously, giving enough time for all the due diligence and to ask every question that needs to be asked and and get the answer to all those questions. But you're right. We do want to get whatever the answer is going to be. We want to get it expeditiously. Mr. Smith, you lean forward.
I was just going to say that it would be my intention no later, whether it be done through consensus, through a collaborative process with all these people, or whether it be done through just our attempt to gain as much information as we can. My intention is that either staff, or if not staff, me, will have a scheduling proposal for you at the next commission meeting. And among the issues, I would just say that we would normally deal with in one of these. The rules contemplate the use of pre-filed testimony. We sometimes do use that. We very, very frequently do not. I think that's an issue we have to address here. Is that a sensible process in this case, or isn't it? And what I would like to do is have some discussions, particularly with the major parties, and to the extent we can with all of them, as to just what seems to make sense. And then we'll advertise it, we'll notice it out to everybody so everybody's got full rights, and we'll bring something before the commission so you can make those decisions as to, and it's something I think the commissioners should be thinking about those things. Do you want pre-filed testimony in this case? What is a reasonable time, you think, for discovery in a case like this? And so on and so on. Thank you, and sorry for taking so much time.
Well, it's a pretty big deal, so we're certainly not going to begrudge you an extra 30 seconds to get the point across. Any commissioner discussion on the motion on the floor? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks. We'll move now to the telecommunications portion of the docket. Item number one, I think, probably makes sense to be taken in tandem with item number two on the addendum. Item number one on the main agenda is in the matter of the petition of Sprint for arbitration pursuant to the Telecom Act of 96 with Brookings Municipal Utilities, which does business at Swiftel. And then items number two on the addendum deal with the application of Sprint for authority to provide local exchange services in certain areas served by Swiftel, and also to provide those services in certain areas served by Interstate Telecommunications Cooperative. The question on each of those is whether or not the Commission shall grant the parties joint motions for delay of hearings. Perhaps we'll look to Mr. Wazorek for any of your comments, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Commission may recall that we previously came before...
Tal, I am sorry. I don't think it's on your end, but we have we're hearing you very faintly. If you could speak up just a bit, I think it would help.
I certainly can. Tell me, can you hear me now?
Better?
Yeah, that's not Sprint, but... I'll steal the line from Verizon today.
Are you on a handset or a speakerphone?
I am on a handset.
All right. Well, we're doing the best we can. Go ahead.
All right. The commission might recall that we had requested a continuance previously as we tried to work out a business solution on these items. We are not completed with that. We do feel that we are making progress. And rather than come back to you for another short continuance of a couple months, which we did last time, we've come forward with a fairly lengthy continuance to ensure that we either resolve this or come back and finish it out in front of you in that time period. And thus, we had asked for the Commission to grant the continuances in all three dockets mentioned.
Thanks very much, Mr. Zork. We do have some other parties on the line, ITC, Swiftel. Any comments, anyone?
Swiftel has no comments except to support the motion filed.
Okay, thanks very much. This time we'll turn toward staff, see if Ms. Van Bakker and Mr. Scholm have any comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Staff also supports the motion and would ask that the commissioners grant it.
Thanks very much. Any commissioner or advisor comments or questions? Go ahead, Commissioner Colbeck.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Colbeck. We're talking about TC06. 176, 178, and 180, all three. I'll motion to grant the motion to delay.
Okay.
All three of those dockets.
Okay, thanks. The motion has been made. Is there any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks very much to everyone. All right. We will now proceed to telecom item number two, and my intention, as we did at our last meeting, would be to take these en masse, these certifications regarding federal universal service support, and see if staff has anything in particular they'd like to pull out of these for discussion, and then also give commissioners and advisors an opportunity to pull anything out in particular. Does anybody have any concerns with that approach? Hearing none, let's go ahead and look towards staff. Telecom item number two. Any comments, Ms. Kramer, Mr. Best?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. This is Harlan Best of staff. I filed a number of, or not a number, but some of the dockets had questions that I have asked of the companies. They did file those with the commission. Those are in the respective dockets. based on the filings and the responses, staff would recommend that the commission provide the certification to the FCC and to USAC. The companies did file in accordance with the commission's administrative rules, and each of their respective companies have certified that they will only use the support for the provision, maintenance, and upgrading of facilities and services as is consistent with 47 U.S.C. Section 254, paren E.
Thanks very much, Mr. Best. We should see if any of the filers are on the line and have any comments with regard to their particular documents. Hearing none, are there any commissioner or advisor comments or questions? Commissioner Kolbeck.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Kolbeck. Mr. Best, there was a kind of a switcheroo for Jefferson. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about? It was kind of, it was confidential, obviously, but I'll ask it this way. Is it customary or is it normal that if money isn't spent in 1 year, it can be used in a different year? I'll put it that way. Do you see any problems with that?
The support received?
Yeah. There were the support received and then wasn't used, and then they carry that over? Is that how that is, how that works?
Well, the support is used either for facility upgrade or for coverage of expenses.
Okay.
So it's not really carried over because you don't track dollar for dollar. But what they did is they had a proposed facility upgrade that did not take place.
Yes, exactly.
And that was because one of the developments didn't occur.
Yes.
But that was just a forecast of what they were going to put in the ground. They did not have to put it in the ground. So the support received then, rather than going for a facility upgrade, went for maintenance.
Okay. So it was used.
It was used, yes.
That was my concern. Okay.
Any other commissioner or advisor comments or questions? Yeah, Commissioner Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Best, the Universal Service Fund. We're all going to struggle with how we ask you questions. In my opinion, at least, should be used towards providing better quality service in rural areas, and I think that essentially is why it was formulated. My concern is always been from a standpoint of multiple carriers. When we have several carriers receiving funding within one area, whether or not that has a tendency to dilute the amount of funds that are available for other carriers, and then in essence it's at cross purposes and doesn't provide the funding to a carrier who would have otherwise been able to build out further and provide better service to that rural area. Are you in these dockets that have been filed before us concerned that, or do you see any validity in any of the areas that concern might be valid? With any of the filings that we have before us?
Present filings are for incumbent carriers.
So
there are none of them are for, if I recall correctly, are for competitive carriers.
Are there multiple carriers in some of the areas?
Yes, in that there are wireless providers that have received certification for eligible telecommunications carrier status.
And as you rightfully pointed out, they're all incumbent at the present time.
I believe so, that are before us, and those their support is based on their actual costs.
Okay. Have you tracked this at all from a standpoint where you would be able to ascertain whether or not there is a genuine increase in the spending in a particular area by a a new incumbent carrier who, my concern is that there's a potential for someone to have been going through a process of spending, we'll say, $1 million a year, and they receive $1.2 million for Universal Service Fund, and they spend $1.5 million. In essence, they've decreased the amount of monies that they otherwise would have been spending and supplanted those with Universal Service Funds. Have we tracked any of that to be able to ascertain whether that takes place?
You mean as far as spending, tracking what they spent before they started to receive Universal Service Funds?
Correct.
No.
Okay. Is that difficult to do in some of the areas? I know we don't have a lot of situations of that nature, but I'd be curious to know if that's a yeoman's job or not.
All of the incumbents are certified as eligible carriers, so I'm not sure how you would. I guess you could ask the question before certification of ETC, what did you spend each year?
Do we have the ability after the fact, during the process, to ask that question, to go through it?
I would imagine we could.
I'd be curious to know how we'd go through the process of obtaining that information, whether it needs to come from the commission or whether it can come from an analyst. Would you take a peek at that for me?
I would imagine staff could ask the question. You want to know for what?
I want to know whether or not they're actually increasing their expenditures on build-outs or whether they're just using the money to supplant what their expenses otherwise would have been. And if past couple of years would be fine.
Well, they've been receiving universal service support, I believe, for about the last five.
Oh, all of them? All
yes.
Of the, okay, I'm only interested in the ones who have perhaps received ETC status in the past 2 or 3 years.
And that would be probably the wireless carriers.
Probably.
It'd be the competitive LEPs.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other commissioner comments or questions?
Yeah, I just have one I thought of in Harlem. It's just, what's the mechanism to catch that? If a company was to say, there's a new building development going on, so I need more money this year, and then, oh, I guess it didn't happen. What is our safety? And I may be talking about different types of different companies that, you know, not necessarily a building development or a spur an economic development that didn't happen. Is there any way that we can make sure that we're not abusing the fund, I guess is what I'm after?
You know, Commissioner Colbeck, it was always helpful for me to try to really break the way they can spend the money into two pieces. One is on the maintenance of their system, of their rural network, and then one is, you know, adding to it. But they're not under any obligation to put any money in that second pot if it's all being used in the first pot. And that's what's really interesting, I think, in these filings when you take a look at them collectively, is how it costs so much to maintain a rural network that there isn't any obligation to use any of those additional dollars into building out a new network. And if I've misstated that, Mr. Best, let me know. But
no,
I mean, as long as they spend all of the dollars they received on expenses that are acceptable to be used for that, they're not under any obligation to do the, you know, if they need to do the first 10 on the list, they don't have to do 11, 12, or 13 in that year.
Right. Excuse me. What you're saying is true. The because they can use it for provisioning, maintenance, or upgrading of the facility. And if you looked at just the maintenance or the expenses that these companies have, usually just the expense alone, the expenses are more than what they're getting in universal service support. But all they're doing is they're forecasting, they're giving us an estimate of what they may put in the ground for the next 2 years. And then what I have done is I went back, since this was support that they received for 2006, I went back and looked at what the companies estimated they were going to put into the ground in 2006 and what they actually put in. And if there was a variance, I asked what caused that variance. And in Jefferson's case, they came back and said, well, one of the developments didn't occur. We didn't have to spend whatever it was they were forecasting on putting facility in the ground. What they did is they took the support money and used it for expenses instead.
That's really nice. And just to add another point, to the extent that you're talking about a CEETC who is not actually serving the entire area, not offering services throughout their entire area, to that extent, then there are build-out requirements. They do have to, at some point, offer service to everyone within that area.
Those are for the, as Ms. Weiss mentioned, for the competitive ETCs. These are, I think, before us today, all incumbents. Any other commissioner comments or questions? I would note, I would just thank staff. I mean, the commissioners may take action on all of these through a single motion, but obviously staff work is focused on each one of these dockets individually, and I think it was good to see any time there was an anomaly or a difference from what was forecasted the year before, staff did data requests, and obviously that's great. A ton of legwork on, or at least some legwork on a number of these. And the last comment I'd make, and this will be the third time I make it, I mean, I think every time I review these filings, it's just impressive how much, frankly, new fiber is being put in the ground. I mean, how much improvement is being made in these networks, and it's amazing. You look at some of the small communities that are getting better telephony and perhaps other stuff as well because of the investment, but, you know, we're focused on telephony, obviously, so. That's all I have. Any other comments or questions by commissioners or advisors? Again, staff didn't raise any particular concerns with any of these dockets, so I do think a motion to handle them all in mass is probably acceptable if anyone wants to move in that direction.
I move that the commission provide a certification to the Federal Communications Commission and to the Universal Service Administration Company regarding the plan for the use of federal universal service support as posed in each of the dockets contained in today's agenda under item 2 in telecommunications. Will that suffice instead of reading each one?
I think that's pretty good. Motion has been made. No seconds required. Any discussion on the motion as made? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
And Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. We'll now take up telecom. Actually, number 3, item number 3, numbered number 2 on the agenda, but it's we'll take up the filing of approval of amendments to agreements for TC07-080 and 081. The question before the commission is, shall it approve the amendments to the above agreements? Usually on these, we do go to staff. First, Ms. Van Bockeren.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kara Van Bockeren for staff. Both amendments were properly filed and executed. They do not appear to contain any discriminatory provisions. No comments were filed, and staff therefore recommends approval.
Thanks very much, Ms. Van Bockeren. Ms. Siebold, anything on Quest's behalf?
We have no comments. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks very much. any commissioner comments or questions, or advisor comments or questions? Hearing none, I'll move that the commission approve the amendments to the above agreements. Motion has been made. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. I believe we're down to one item, which is the remaining item on our agenda addendum. That deals with a grain warehouse. Item number 1 is GD07-001. It deals with LW Sales and LW Seeds' failure to obtain necessary licensure prior to operating as a grain dealer in the state of South Dakota. A motion has been filed to amend the procedural schedule by staff. That's the question for the commission today. Ms. Van Bockeren?
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I do believe the motion and the brief do speak for themselves. However, I will just indicate that staff's had a difficult time getting any action out of the other party. We've had a hard time obtaining information. They've not been easy to work with. And originally it appeared that we had some fact-finding to do. As we've proceeded, Mr. Malhoff and I have continued to research this topic, and it appears we do not have any fact-finding. And therefore, a motion for summary judgment was not contemplated in the original scheduling conference. Staff would ask for the opportunity to file such a motion now.
Any commissioner or advisor comments or questions? Ms. Ann Bachran, I don't see any representative from LD Sales or LW Sales or LW Seeds on the line. Have you had any communication with them with regard to this filing?
I have not in regards to this filing. However, several deadlines have passed, and I have communicated with counsel for LW Seeds, LW Sales regarding those deadlines, and again, I've not gotten a reaction, so I don't know if they intend to be active participants in this file in any meaningful way.
Am I remembering properly that you expected by the end of the month to have the motion for summary judgment?
Yes.
I think that's right.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. On or before July 31, and then allow LW Sales, LW Seeds to reply on or before August 13th.
Okay.
And we'll go from there. If staff feels they need to respond to any sort of a filing that LW Seeds brings before commission, we will. A response may not be necessary.
Great. Any other comments or questions, commissioners or advisors? Hearing none, any motion?
A motion in GD07001 that today the commission grant the motion.
Motion has been made. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. I believe that concludes the business of the commission today. Thank you very much, everyone.